Call the meeting back to order.
Okay, you are on.
We left off with MWH finishing up a presentation, and we're going to move on to Kiewit. I suppose that's next. Is it, Chris, is that?
Yes.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you. And for the Kiewit folks, would introduce themselves to the record?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. My name is Eddie Bardon. I represent TIC as one of the Kiewit companies that resides in the energy sector of our operations.
Okay. Alan Snyder. I'm from the Lenexa, Kansas Kiewit office.
Okay. So for the record, what does TIC mean?
The industrial company.
Okay.
Primarily oil, gas, petrochemical, power, mining. We've been a member of the Kiewit companies since 2008.
Okay. And they're based where?
In Denver.
Okay.
Ted, would you advance the...
I'm sorry.
So if I may start, we were able to get to execution of an early works contract with ADA. It was actually signed on Monday of this week. It wasn't an easy process, Mr. Davis, but we did get through it. Council was very cooperative. And yesterday, as of yesterday, we also executed the first notice to proceed. The early works contract is set up in two basic tasks, which are phased. The first task being construction, the second being engineering, if I may simplify it. The construction task primarily allows us to select a subcontractor for the site development at the job, at the project site, and manage those contractors. And the second phase of the early works contract involves the design and engineering phases. What we executed yesterday was the notice to proceed with Mr. Davis's staff for that second phase of the early works, being the engineering piece. We'll be able to execute the first phase, being the construction of the site development, here within the next couple of weeks. We have let the request for proposal out on the street to some selected contractors here in the state. Those proposals should come back today. So within the next, we're thinking within the next week, we should have selection. And that will allow mobilization, you know, contingent on some other items. But with that being said, I'll turn it over to Alan, and he can maybe speak to a little more detail around what the indicative pricing looks right. like and what his staff will be involved in.
The first phase of the next 6 weeks is structured to provide more information for the engineering staff so they could remove some of the uncertainty revolving around the cost of the project. So the main items involved in this next 6 weeks are to do the indicative estimate, and to support that, we're going to look into modular construction part of this, as well as the foundations, the piles, the design for those. We're going to talk to geotechnical engineers, we're going to talk to the surveyors, probably the fire marshal and the gravel pad contractors, all in order to get more information on the design that's required at the site and feed that into the indicative estimate that will be used, that will be developed in the next 6 weeks, and all that in an effort to come to the plus or minus 20% that Chris discussed a little earlier in the meeting. And then at the end of that, the indicative estimate will be ready to review. And then the following phase will be phase two, the 12-week effort, and that will be the firm price estimate that has been discussed a couple of times earlier today. And that will be for the EPC portion of the project. And that'll all be performed at the Lenex office for the Kiewit and Lenex, Kansas. And the team has been assembled. They've been working since late last week on this project. They're currently planning on arriving in Anchorage the week of the 16th to do some of this investigation work that I've discussed with the surveyors, the geotechs, and the modular fabricators and so forth to obtain that information. So the Kiewit team will be here for a week to get better informed about the costs and the methods of construction for the North Slope.
Quick question. So, sure. So on the early works part of it, you know, Kiewit's had a presence in Alaska for quite some time. You know, I know Atlantic Fairbanks, the facility on Bigger Road, and then obviously the folks that you have here in Anchorage. And I do know they do civil work. So are they going to be involved? Is that group going to be involved up on the North Slope as far as the early works portion of it?
We actually previously talked to the Kiewit Building Group here in Anchorage and the Kiewit offices. So part of the information that we developed earlier came from them. We'll be using them again to facilitate work on the slope and to help us organize our efforts. We will be using those guys.
I would expect there's probably some pretty good experience in our slope operations.
Yep.
Did you have internally with your
That's team? True. They've already helped us to a certain degree, and we'll continue to call on them for help.
And do you have a time frame on EPC stuff as far as when you anticipate, as far as where, when and where you think you'll start doing something with the path?
Yes, I can share some dates. I have this is right out of the RFP that we've released last week. As I said earlier, proposals are due on the 4th, today. We would release our notice to proceed on the 13th of June. We expect some pre-construction topographic and staking surveys by the end of the month. And these are requirements right out of our RFP. The draft drawings and specifications we will review by mid-July, and then review and comment by the end of July. Final construction drawings and specs are due August 1st, and then completion by the end of September. With those dates being shared, again, we'll award within the next week, and we expect to start working the quarry on the slope by the beginning of July, and mobilization to set the material by the beginning of August, and that being contingent on that Army Corps 404 permit.
So your contract's up on the slope for the EPC that you can give to the local contractors or subs or dirt work or piling contractors or surveyors. Is it a fixed cost?
It will be.
Okay. And so it won't be based on quantity. It's going to be based on fixed costs.
It's a lump sum.
Lump sum.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alan Rick, if I could share this really quickly. For some of the audience, could you go through the EPC process and what that actually will mean for this project? You know, engineering, procurement, contracting, just so that we have
Before that, just one last question. The pad size, so obviously you had to come up with an assumption how big the pad's going to be for a plant of a certain size. So would you mind sharing what you've come up with, how the pad size is going to be able to accommodate how big a plant?
6 to 9.
Okay. Is there an ability to expand after that? On the pad? Is there more room to put more gravel, you know, more pad, more piling in for additional modules if you wanted to?
On the same size pad, or
on the existing land,
on the lease.
So I assume you're not going to fill in the whole
expand pad, right.
Piece of property. So is there the ability to expand it?
It depends on the size of the expansion, of course. Are we there yet, Alan, with how much expansion could be if, let's say, we install 9, install that third train?
Yeah, you're asking if it goes above 9 or not.
Do you have the ability to expand it above 9, even if it's the 10 or 12? Or
I would think so, yes.
And that's being worked on right now. The term sheet that we have with QIT, with MWH, goes out to how much, Mark? And what they're looking at?
12. But we always anticipated that it could even be larger. So the pad with the pen selected is 17 acres. But Truth's got to come up with a design. And that's the acreage pad, maybe, that's slightly different size. That's what it's going to be worked on. But yeah, they'll build up and be room for expansion. And that's been built into it. How much depends also on the design, a little bit. So again, well, the indicative price will give us that design. And the pad, once we get this together in July, we'll know the answer to that. A lot more specificity. But yes, it could be expanded. That's in the idea. But right now, we're trying to get the optimum price on a 6 to 7, 6 to 9, that's right, plant. And that is trying to get the lowest possible price that provides a well-built plant.
You wanted a review of the EPC process?
So for the board, just remind you, this is the real risk dollars, because you know, this is a CAG that was constructed before we have a commercial agreement with everybody. So I just want everybody to understand what this means. And appreciate the feedback. Crystal?
I do have a question, because, you know, we are a public corporation for Alaska. In your RP, was there any preference for Alaska companies? And how much experience are you requiring who have worked on the slope in these conditions?
The contractors we went to with the RFP, they're both Alaskan companies. Was there a preference stated in the RFP? No.
Okay.
The contractors we used or that are in our selection grid right now were contractors that were previously looked at for the development of the plant.
Okay. Well, with that kind of aggressive schedule, it would be pretty tough for a non-local contractor to respond, I would think.
There was never a question in our minds how we would contract that.
Looks like phones went down.
Okay. What's the contingency of that between?
You
get to go home or what?
Did you dial back in? Yeah, I'm trying to. It's just not going.
Gary, you had a question?
I don't think I'm jumping ahead, but maybe what is the green bar that says long lead equipment? What does that mean?
That refers to the engineered equipment that would be long lead and, you know, 1 year or longer in from the time you order it to the time it shows up on site.
What is it?
Oh, the liquefaction technology equipment, so the cold box, the nitrogen compressor, the companders, potentially the pretreatment package.
Oh, so you're talking about the plant.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. QA is only involved in the design of the plant, building the plant, and the pad. So they're not involved in the right now the rest of the chain.
So what does that line say to me? Sometime between the 1st of June and the middle of October, we're going to do something with long lead equipment, and what is that something?
Yeah, there's part of our job is to identify the equipment that needs to be released so that it'll show up in time so we can make the schedule. And so part of the indicative in the phase two work is to identify that equipment and make sure that we provide some idea of the cost that will be associated with that.
So is that getting in the queue, so to speak, into the manufacturing process of the supplier?
Yes, absolutely.
And then is there, I assume there's a deposit required?
Yes, and there'd be a deposit and a cancellation schedule associated
okay.
with it, yes.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And you would do that based on a 3 or a 6 or a 9?
Yes. The right, 6 or 9.
And that's okay. Thank you.
And just, I think right now what we are looking at and what was in the early works agreement, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rick and Mark, is that right now, based on what we believe the demand is, that we are looking at an indicative price for a 6 and a 9 and an extension from 6 to 9, is my understanding, Dennis?
Yes, we reported that request over to Keeley about a month ago, and we're going to confirm that again today.
Which will give the board and MWH and North League the information on, based on how the demand's coming in, what size of plant, what the costs are. If you go with the 6 and then add to another 3 BCF to go to 9, or if you go with 9 directly. So you're going to be able to see the different combinations up front of how we would try to meet the demand.
And this goes back to a discussion I think we had months ago where the addition of a train was $30 million.
We will know.
Plus or minus.
The indicative price will give us that plus or minus, yeah, for sure. And again, that goes back to what Rick was saying. The difference between us going through a feasibility study, which we went through with MEI and HDR, on what you believe the costs are, to truly looking at the requirements and coming up with a cost on a cost, what's it, class 3, plus or minus 20%. So we're going past the feasibility section into the due diligence section and how that works with our regular type of project decision.
Thank you. And it's important to know that that's a firm fixed price, and now we're talking about risk being, now we're talking about risk being built into that price as well. And that's an important thing that goes above and beyond what sort of estimates you get from consultants.
Yes. Okay.
Is there any questions more from the board? I assume you're done. Are you guys done?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll say more questions.
Any questions from board members? All right, I think I would like to, any questions overall as far as anything needs to be answered now that we have both MWH and Kiewit here and Mark, so we'll call him our project sponsor with Aneda. Gary?
Could I take my little grid and just ask some questions and have MWH or Ted answer? So, my head, I broke this down. We're going to buy some gas. We're going to clean it, freeze it. And we're going to ship it. We're going to store it. And we're going to distribute it. So, first thing we're going to do is buy it. When do we expect to have that price? What date?
That's the gas supply agreement.
And that's Ada, and we're headed on the timeline. It's June 30th.
And if I may, Ted, if you could back up to the slide that shows the direction, you can kind of point out these. Keep going. Right. Next one. One more. Right there. So gas supply agreement. Right there.
And I would say, and Chris and I haven't had a chance to discuss, that we'll have a good idea by June 30th. I'm not going to say that we will have a contract signed by June 30th. We're not going to know that until we meet and start going through that process with contractors. We do, there is a contract right now that GBA has that is known and could be used, and they're talking with, we're all talking with GBA right now, that we are starting that heavy duty process of working with North Slope producers on that. So,
yeah, well, Mr. Davis, director, well, we'll probably have by June 30th, term sheet, hopefully, right, with an agreement, but this will be a formal term sheet, which is the practice for the producers, from my experience. So it's really not the contract, but the terms don't deviate materially from that. And one material term will be what the plant will pay for the fuel gas, the fuel gas, what the price will be.
and whether it will, and how that price will behave over time. So we should be able to provide that to the project, by the end of the month.
And it's not my purpose to talk about each of these and drill down. I just want to get on the record a date that we can expect some of these things to happen, the variance of that date, and the precision of the bid, of the quote. So we're going to come back and talk about the gas contract at a time in the future. But so if we could just kind of stay on the simple little. Okay.
So we don't expect this June 30th. We will hope to have a term sheet price for gas.
And that's in that slide, something with the yellow box in front of it.
Yeah, and if I just quick comment that June 30th for a gas supply agreement is a very important date for MWH, where we are very interested in this in certainty around price.
Sure. Okay. The second one, then we're going to clean it and freeze it. So when do we expect? I think I now know that's called the EPC price.
That's right.
And that is now out. What's the date of that?
Indicative price 15th is here, and the final cost is there. So that was mid-July and early October.
October 1. And we don't have any expectation that would move to the left. It would come earlier.
No, Kiewit has always maintained that they need a certain, and this is their process. They have to go through a certain amount of weeks to get through, and since we just got the early works line, that go signal has been.
And what would be our level of comfort in that it may move out further? Could it move out a month or two?
I think we're pretty fixed on that one in that schedule. They're good.
So the latest cost date.
If I might talk, we asked Kiewit for the indicative price, what time frame they would need. They gave us that time frame. We agreed to it. Obviously, we're relying on their expertise. I think it's a pretty hard date. I mean, the way the contract works, that's what they agreed to, and I think we're going to get there. The next date, then after that, the final price, is also when we're talking about. So we're really trying to give you dates, the board, all of you, to the best we can based on the expertise we've got on this project.
And I'm sorry, I can't follow my own chart. I want to go back to buy it. So we're going to buy it from somebody on the slope. Are we going to have a precise number, or are we going to have a range?
Just to clarify the question, I'm sorry, I'm a lawyer. You're talking about what we're going to buy for the price?
I'm talking about the feed gas.
The price per MCF?
Yes.
Okay. That should be down through negotiation by the end of this month. If we're able to come to terms.
It's a fixed number,
so it's going to be a precise number.
Yes,
not a range.
Term sheet will take time to turn into the actual contract, mm-hmm. but a term sheet of this type is really a roadmap for all the hard portions of the contract. Okay. And we are scheduled to begin those negotiations tomorrow.
Okay. Then down to the clean it and freeze it. So the EPC number, will that be a precise number, or will that be a range?
That'll be precise.
Okay, thank you.
Firm price.
And part of that, by or that section is also the operations cost. So you have the EPC, the capital cost, and the op cost. So those two costs together are the clean it and freeze it.
So that's CapEx and OpEx.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, then the next one, we're going to haul it. So where are we going to get our, what's the best date for our trucking costs?
June 30th. I think, June 30th, the recommendations will come out. I don't expect that there'll be changes in numbers when we go to final by July 25th. So I think June 30th is it.
For the cost, Chris, you may have a transportation.
We'll have indicative costs for transportation. To tell you the truth, the firm costs come later, but the first indicative costs come, and I'm going to actually say, because they are that's when we declared it to be final, uh-huh. In terms of indicative costs, July 25th.
Okay.
I won't get too ahead of it.
July 25th, we're going to have the trucking costs, and we don't expect that to come any sooner.
No. And those would be indicative costs. They're not final costs.
You don't get a final until you have an actual contract.
Correct.
And do we expect that number to be precise or a range?
Precise or a range?
The contract cost is going to be precise.
Contract cost would be precise. I would say it would be a range at the indicative level.
Yeah. And Mr. Bovet, by definition, indicative price means you're going to have a range on this kind of pricing. It's not subject to the engineering standard, plus or minus 20%, but it's going to be in a range based upon the data we've got. And as it does, it breaks that closing. Each agreement with each offtake, right, is going to come a lot closer to the transportation cost.
So July 24th
will make a decision with that part data.
So July 25th will be a not to exceed number for the indicative cost.
When you say not to exceed, in my parlance, that means that you have somebody who's going to go on the hook and will be at risk for that. It would be our belief that the transportation costs would fall into a range that is, you know, relatively narrow compared to the data we've got, and it would be based on the specific approach that is recommended. So it's going to be a much higher quality number than a feasibility number.
So it'll be a range that will continue to be refined.
Correct.
Okay. The next, we're going to store it, and that's not part of this deal, and we're going to distribute it. That's not part of the discussion today.
We will have, we think, improved storage numbers over feasibility level numbers. And that I would characterize those as being similar to the trucking. They will be represented in a range. The accuracy of the number we would expect to be higher than feasibility because it is more specific to the project that, you know, as planned. And that would come on the same date, July 25th.
And your involvement, the storage is your attempt to, from your note the other day, to integrate to be part of the whole supply chain, so to speak.
Correct. How is the system, FOB Fairbanks, best operated, best sized, best, and that is a task of the integration group to come up with that solution, and then getting improved cost numbers associated with that is part of the goal of the integration effort.
So we're looking at indicative numbers. It'll be a range on July 23rd.
Correct.
Okay. And then the distributed, that's the ADA part. You're not involved in that.
Yeah, we, for distribution information like that, we rely on the utilities to provide that to us, so we would, that would come from them.
Okay, so that's a question to ask of the AEA folks, and when they'll start to have the distribution costs.
And Gary, Ted's position, or personal opinion on this, is, again, the distribution costs are the costs that the utilities are going to make on their own, based on what they think their financing and our assistance is going to be. But, you know, FNG does not have to tell us their distribution cost. IGU is more of a regulated... Well, I think you will have from FNG through the regulation process an estimate of those. But, again, we're going to come and be able to tell the community, the utilities, what we can bring gas in for. On the distribution system, they're going to be deciding that no matter what, because whether or not the distribution comes in from the Cook Inlet, or if it comes in from gas from the North Slope, or to a pipe, that distribution cost is going to be the distribution cost, no matter what the source of the gas is. And where our commitment as AEA and ADA is to assist the utilities through whatever financing we have through bonds, and whatever monies which will help through this process that are left from building a plant and the storage that can go into distribution.
But we've always focused on the meter. So that has to be part of the total cost when we sit at this table, is the viability of this project.
and we will not have a final number for that. I think it's going to be, again, the district, the utilities giving us that number and their belief. But the final decision of going forward on that is based on the takeoff agreements that the utilities are willing to give at September or October. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's telling you whether or not they believe they can meet that meter price. I mean, we've estimated a range between 14 and 18. I think it's 30% to 40%. We need to know from them and the decision they make of what distribution costs are. That is one point that we as a board do not control at all. We can provide assistance in helping them to lower the cost through the financing, but how they decide to work together, how they decide to do the efficiency of their operations controls that section.
So do we need then a session or sessions with AEA to understand how they're starting to refine the distribution costs? And this is just an example. The top four things that we just talked about, they come in at $15 at the flange at the tank in Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. AEA, FNG, IGU, they're going to add some number to that. If they add five or six, we've got a bad project.
Well, I guess the question for you, and this is a philosophical question that the board's going to ask, if the community comes in and we say it's 15, which I'm looking at Rick and Chris saying it's going to be a lot less than that. I'm, you know, say 12.
At the storage,
coming into Fairbanks, mm-hmm. and you still get from F&G, IGU, and GBA that they're committed to buy 6 BCF gas. Are we going to say that's a bad project at that point in time? If the community believes, and this is what I've always been, you know, we've discussed, believes that whatever we come in with this fixed price at is a good price for them to move forward, are we saying that's a bad project? I mean,
somewhere in our discussions, we could look back 6 months in a while, IGU said, if we hit 20, we're dead, something of that. I just remember that number. So I think that was an offhand comment and hasn't been vetted, but it's been a comment that's been in my head. And so, again, we're interested in at the meter, not at the storage tank.
But as Ms. Dave mentioned before, purposes of looking at conversion, you look at the carbon port, price is important, but you have to look at the fuel substitution issue. Because this is a fuel substitution business model. Mm-hmm. So right now, you know, fuel oil in Fairbanks is about $3.90. It's come down a little bit. It's at $4.20 when we started talking in January, but always tends to go up in the winter. But it's at about $28 to $30 equivalency. So another way to look at it is we just need to be well below that to make it work. So even though the IGU put out the number of 20, I mean, I think that was just like a kind of a guesstimate on their part about the range. The real issue is, can we offer the consumer, you know, substantial savings when they convert from one fuel to the other, plus convenience and plus lower pollution? I mean, there's a bunch of factors that, you know, affect people's decisions. And so, what we're building here is an FOB plant price. Then we're working hard on the trucking component. And I've been working very hard with the MWH on that, and they're have a lot of experience. And then we'll work on this on the storage component. So that, but I don't think it's ever going to approach the price of diesel. So in that sense, you know, the project has perhaps viability. Now we will do everything we can with our tools to lower those distribution costs, and we've already done that in the loan that the board approved with Fairbanks Natural Gas. Those loan provisions provided essentially a form of what I would call patient capital, then cash flow. Now, of course, they will be subject to economic regulation by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and so what Ted's saying is right, we don't have any direct control over that, but we do know pretty much what they do, what their business model is. Secondly, the IGU is going to be regulated essentially by the Fairbanks North Shore Borough Assembly, and because they're a public utility, so they're not technically under economic regulation by the RCA. Now they are under they actually have an RCA certificate. It's a little complicated legally. The way to look at it is the borough is kind of their gatekeeper for the consumer. And the borough is going to be a good way to watch what they're doing on their side. So remember, we have two watchdogs, the borough assembly and the RCA, watching out for the consumer. And then it really becomes a matter of rate of return, internal rate of return for each company. And so the actual verdict of price is going to be based on a number of factors. But we're doing everything we can to keep that down. I just want to request that the board will give me a full time set. We're working on the fuel gas price. You know, trying to get that best possible.
So what about it?
The best possible price. We're working with CUA to get the indicative price so we know what we're going to pay for that plant. We're working on the operating expense and the capital expense, and they're doing the long lead times. Hewitt, in my discussions with them, said they think they can do a very good job on the procurement of long lead items. And I think that's right. So that'll drive costs down. So the whole issue is trying to get that cost down. So we are very much focused on burnership rate, but we're not in a position to really give you, you know, a range, you know, per se. But I can say that I think we'll be well underneath the price of diesel fuel. Secondly, just to finally add, yesterday, Region 10 of the EPA issued, and the Department of Department over this, but they issued a directive on carbon emissions in Alaska, which put us under a mandate by 2030 to reduce carbon emissions. They have also are moving toward ultra low sulfur diesel throughout the United States, so much so that Platts last week said it would no longer issue prices on low sulfur diesel because they don't think there'll be a market. And Platts, you know, is a major indicator of gas and oil futures. So I think that $30 price that we got now, approximately 2030, is actually going to go up. So the delta between the gas and the diesel is probably going to be great.
But I think just one last answer on that, Chair, is that we will have the utilities here, Gary. They are working with AEA, and they can give us their estimate before we do the financial close for what they think the distribution costs will be. And then the board can make the decision of the financial close. I mean, burnership, we've always tried to go with a goal between the 13 and 18, what we said, or 13 and 17, 49. I mean, and as, like I said, I guess from the financial standpoint, if the IGU, FNG, and GDA take these takeoff agreements, they must believe they can meet a burner tip price, I guess was what I was trying to say. I probably wasn't very clear. That meets the needs of their customers.
Okay.
I could just finish up. What we're not saying here is that the meter price is, we're not concerned about the meter price. We're concerned about the storage tank plans. We want to know what it's going to cost, because there are families that are going to sit at the dinner table, and America's awash in oil. And if that price, if that delta does come down, I mean, $4 a gallon is $30 diesel. $3 a gallon is $20. $20 per amp. So there's the place where the decisions are going to be made, and Cardinal made a lot of assumptions and came up with these glowing assumptions that there's going to be 60, 80, 100% conversion. That's not going to happen. If the oil price comes down and our price comes up, and that delta is 5 instead of 10. So I got us off on a rabbit trail there, and I'm sorry, but we're going to be concerned about the meter, about distribution costs here.
And I'm not saying we're not, Gary. Okay. I'm saying our goal is to bring gas to the customer, the families, at the lowest cost we can. I guess what I'm saying, for control purposes, the part we can control as ADA is bringing the gas into Fairbanks. I mean, we can control that. The distribution cost are controlled by so many factors on the utilities. You know, if they hire, what type of people they hire, how many people they hire.
I understand.
And we're, I don't want to think anyone thinks that we don't care that what the price comes to the meter.
I'm just going to make a comment on that. I think what ultimately could happen is you're going to find two different meter prices. Here, you're going to find a FNG meter price, and you're going to find an IGU. And the worst case scenario is that the IGU price is tougher as far as compared to the price of oil. And that's that we may be faced with that. That's a distinct possibility. Hopefully that isn't it is. And I'm going to be very curious to get Mark's down the line definition of what substantial means. I'm going to look what that substantial savings is. Michael?
I just have one question triggered when Mark talked about regulatory. The off-take agreements, do they have to be approved by the RCA?
I believe the off-take agreement between regulated utility will be subject to RCA scrutiny. Based that on the practice of the RCA and looking at the off-take agreements for NSTAR and the Coquillon, and I would assume they follow that same precedent, but I can't guarantee it.
Okay. Gary, you got some more on there? Any more?
That takes care of just trying to put some dates on just what to expect on down the road.
As a follow-up for Gary's questions, I would like to request from staff and from our consultants that as those mileposts they change, especially to the right, that we're quick note what's going on and why, so that we're up to speed with you. I know everybody gets really busy, and you're focused on trying to get to the finish line. But if something slips, I think it would be nice just to drop us through. Ted, you have drop us a note, keep the board informed.
We will, sir.
So that everybody's on the same page.
So you're saying we will make a commitment that every week, if we think the milepost is going be extended, that we let the board know. So yes, we won't wait until the board meeting.
We don't know what potholes are out there.
Yes.
Hopefully they move the left too.
Either way.
Actually, that tees up something we'd like to say too before we leave. This is I appreciated Mr. Pawlowski's comments earlier. This is a complex project, and we've got today no concession agreement. We've got no gas supply agreement. We've got no offtake agreements. And we've got a public entity and a private entity partnering on this. And each one has strengths, and each one has weaknesses, and we all know what they are. And if we're going to make this project a success, we've got to exploit those strengths to the benefit of the project, but we've got to manage those weaknesses going forward, and schedule is one of them. At the end, we've got to balance risk and reward for everybody, from the consumers, you know, at the meter, to the investor in the plant. Everybody's got to have their risk reward balance met. And speaking for MWH, we're at risk every day right now, and we're adding to that risk every day that goes by. Financial close was supposed to be last week. We're still spending money that we didn't anticipate spending. And my CEO's here, and if I don't say this, he's going to tell me later. We're not going to stay on risk indefinitely. So to that point about schedule slippage, that's our greatest concern. We're driving as hard as we can, and we need a response from the public sector to meet that schedule, because we cannot afford delays on this going forward.
One thing that, Chair, that we have made a commitment, and I think we had a good discussion with Jim and Alan on, is we are going to put the project development team together of ADA and MWH persons working together on a daily basis to ensure that this schedule moves forward.
If we see slippage, we'll tell you immediately.
And
we won't wait till the next board meeting.
On the other side, Alan has given us his direct line. If we see slippage, that communication is going both ways.
Right. Mike?
Mr. Chair, that brings me back to us as a board, and I just asked staff to make sure, given that we have a responsibility to be informed and ready, it sounds like, to act on the concession agreement at our next board meeting, to the extent that we each can have time to work with ADA staff to get ready for that. If there's going to be a resolution, that we're ready to act on it, so we're not going to let it schedule a meeting.
Okay.
That's going to take a commitment of time on each of our parts to be ready for it.
Well, now, Gary,
are we reaching a point with the IEP that we're trying to do and wrap up stuff?
I'm sorry.
I've got a couple other kind of overarching questions.
Go ahead.
When we come back.
You can do it now.
So, thank you. So, question for Ted, it was about our allocation of funds meeting. We talked about the time we're going to weave our magic. And so I made a different source of funds. So, just for the record, when do we expect that meeting may happen?
I think it will happen after July. I mean, how we look at the full allocation of funds is based, again, on a good indicative price from Kiewit and what the plant is going to be. The concession agreement will give us, based on that indicative price, what...
Ted, just give us a date.
Oh. Well, I would say by the end of July, plus or minus 20%, we can know how the allocation is going to be. The true full allocation won't be done until we know the cost of the plant and the capital that Northleaf is willing to invest. That will allow us to know how much we would have left.
And when is that?
In the end of September. But, Chair, I think we can give you a very good idea in August based on the indicative price, how much we would have
tentative
or allocation for distribution.
So allocation of funds August for just our purposes?
Good rough estimate of how much allocation of funds would be left for the distribution system. Sorry, Chair.
All right. Question 5 had to do with trucking. And I asked in my letter to the chair and to you and to the board, we have either a public or a private executive session on where we are on trucking.
Again, I think that would be better at the end of July. MWH sent a memo of the process they're going through that I sent with my report yesterday. But again, we need to go through the process working with the potential customers on where we're at trucking. We won't know more until MWH goes through the process with IGU, FNG, and GDA. That's a July.
July 25th. So up to that point, we should just be quiet and just say trucking's going fine?
Well, I think we will know what type of whether or not the feasibility projection was a correct projection. I mean, we've always said that we can take a good projection and make a feasibility analysis of what that is at the $5. Until we go through June, we won't know if we're in that range until they go through their process. Because trucking costs are based, like they said, it goes way over my head on how you balance storage with the number of trucks you need, the demand that you're going to have for trucks, and then working on that. Also, the thing that the chair really strived for with working, we are working with MWH and FNG on the prototype, so you know how many gallons you can carry too. All those things are coming into my understanding that top blue orange bar on system integration.
So with trucking, it is 40% of the meter cost. I mean, it's our single biggest.
Oh, you got it.
So is what we're doing then is with Carlisle talking to them about what are we talking to them about?
Configuration.
Chair, if I may. So the feasibility. Numbers made certain assumptions about plant size, the amount of demand, and how the plant would be run, and therefore how many trucks you would need to run when, you know, during the year to serve that demand, and that leads you to a certain price. And as the as we look at the system now and what our demand will be, and the, you know, the firm demand at closing and how we're going to serve that, you try to find that balance of lowest cost of the whole system, right? And so one of the things that we are, one of the signals that we're getting from our, you know, Carlisle and others is that when you have a trucking scheme that varies widely by season, there's a big premium associated with that. And so the question then becomes, what's that premium? Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, you have to factor that premium in as you depart from a, you know, perfectly levelized trucking to a following a seasonal swing. And that's the question that Carlisle is looking into, just what is that premium? And that will help optimize that. You know, there'll probably be some seasonality in the way everything is run. There probably has to be. But that's, how much are we going to pay if we build a 9 BCF plant and swing it versus a more levelized approach? And it's interesting, too, because it's, you know, you can talk about a premium in trucking, but there are all kinds of other knock-on impacts associated with running a system with a big seasonal swing like that. How many trucks are you going to stack up in the yard waiting to be unloaded because your loading speeds are what they are? Mm-hmm. You know, and
but that's not rocket science, Chris, because they're doing it right now with other chemicals and fluids, diesels. That's a seasonal swing also. They're busy in the winter and they're slow in the summer.
You're right. It's not rocket. It's
pretty simple to follow.
And that's true, but it's not yet been done for this project, and that's what they're doing.
So are you talking costs, or are you just talking the mechanics, the operations?
Cost. The information that you would need to lead to a commercial agreement. It's not a feasibility exercise. It is a, how are we going to write an RFP to a trucking company or the market so that they can respond? How many trips should they plan on? How many, you know, how many drivers are they going to need at different times of year? All those sort of things.
And you addressed that in that memo we just got from May 20, whenever it is, and you talk about seasonality and making it more of a flat line. I just skimmed your letter to us. Isn't that what you're talking about?
Yeah. What are the benefits of versus the what are the ups and the upsides and the downsides of running a more levelized system? You know, you've got more storage, but there are benefits in other areas. There, Carlisle's piece is the trucking associated with that system running in a more levelized way. So there are multiple parts of it, but Carlisle is focused on the trucking.
As I said in my note, I really don't want a gotcha when the trucking number comes down.
That makes those.
I think you do too. So, yeah. Okay. But I have some questions on the gas contract. Would you like me to do those now or after?
Now would be fine.
I asked Mr. Davis, and I just want to put him on the record, just so it's part of the record, and then the answers come back. Five questions. What does the AOGCC say that it costs BP or field operators to handle the 8 to 9 billion cubic feet a day that they now comes up with the oil and water and they put it back in? Somebody must know what it costs to handle that gas. And I remember in prior life that it was somewhere around $2. $2, yeah. But my question, Mark, is does AOGCC have that information? If they don't, who does? So we have to answer these. How much field gas is used every day by the operators? They have the capacity to generate 320 megawatts of electricity at any time. And that's all powered by natural gas. Most of it's powered by natural gas. So how much do they use a day in hard hundreds of thousands of cubic feet? What's the cost to the operators of that gas? Is the price that we pay for that gas that's coming up from BP or whomever, whatever we're going to pay, let's just say someone might think we pay $3. So is that $3 net? Is that $3 based on losing 15% to CO2 and hydrogen sulfide, or is that just raw gas?
I can answer that. Okay. The offer from in the contract that we've been allowed to see from both producers is raw gas.
So the price, so we're buying 15% CO2 and hydrogen sulfide.
Well, we're buying the composition of the gas has a number of impurities, and some of those impurities can be monetized. One of them would be propane, and some of it can be utilized, in, depending on the design. Again, it's going to be worked on whether you want to burn some of that to run the plant or not, and that's part of the indicative price.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd like to get that down on the record.
So to the board member, John Springsteen, talking to the question that you just addressed. The contract is dictated in BTU content. So it's money to BTU. So it's it would be priced per million to BTU.
So it's a net price.
It's strictly based on the thermal energy content of the gas, not the composition, carbon dioxide and the hydrogen sulfide.
So they make no representation as to the composition of the gas.
Okay. So that whatever price is going to be at the wellhead.
So it's very important to all the producers because they don't really have control over the fuel gas, so they don't want to make a warranty as to the what's in the gas.
So if I could get that answer part of the record. Okay. And then what's the demand? We talked about when we were talking with Spectrum some time ago. What's the demand for field LNG to replace the low sulfur diesel that's being trucked in?
On that, I don't think we can provide an answer on that because I think right now that's all speculative. We've made inquiries about whether people are interested in converting, and at this time, we have no indication that anybody wants to convert, except they say in the future they're looking at it, and those are of course their own proprietary business plan. So right now, I'm assuming that there is no fuel sales for that kind of usage on the North Slope. That doesn't mean there couldn't be sales on the North Slope. For example, the North Slope Borough has indicated on the record that they'd like to buy the propane from the plant, right? And that would be beginning now. And they're also interested in trying to buy gas if they can figure out how to ship it. What I mean is on the production side, that I don't know of any market as yet for LNG.
I believe, Mark, if we can say is, Rick, isn't that part of what MWH is looking at and is starting discussions with producers about the potential of what that market could be?
Yeah, certainly as we're looking at the commercial viability of the plant, we're seeing who's going to buy what, and definitely displacing diesel on the North Slope is of interest to us, but we don't have any good numbers on that yet, but we're keen to learn about
it. But you are working on
that. Definitely.
We've made that inquiry. and what I'm saying is there's general interest, but they don't want to make any commitment to that.
Well, we know there's 20, maybe 30 trucks a day that goes from Pizarro and Valdez.
According to DOT, is approximately 40 trucks a day.
40 trucks a day. And we know how many BTUs are in that truck, and we know they're coming back empty. So they burn those BTUs. There must be a way to convert those BTUs into gas BTUs. And if LNG came in at half of what those are, then there's your market.
Exactly.
So I guess my question is, how many BTUs are in those 40 trucks?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm not that.
But we can work with that.
So we have checked with DOT on it. We're using the counter. DOT maintains a counter at one of the bridges, and so we think that's pretty good data.
Well, I've been told this, I have to be. Okay. So I'd be interested to find out what that is. If you remember, I think we remember that that's where this all started with Spectrum Energy.
Right.
Because he saw the difference between LNG and I-10 and North Slope, and there was $4 difference, and he said, I think I can put a plant here.
Right. Well, one thing I would like to comment on, we certainly are looking at markets beyond utilities if the plant has sufficient capacity, right? And NWH is working on that, and they've entered into an MOU.
At least one so far. Yeah, but we hear that, and we're definitely looking at that transportation market up there keenly. There's a big spread. in those prices for diesel and LNG, like you said.
Mr. Chairman, those were my questions of Mark. So if I could get a response to those that May 21 email, I'd appreciate that. It doesn't have to be pages. Paragraphs will work just fine.
They're good questions, sir. I appreciate that.
And we are working on those with MWH and with
HDR, NDI, and we'll also reach out to our other state agencies to the extent that they can coordinate with.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for our team? All right. With that, I'm going to close the update from MWH. And so we need to I need a motion to move to executive session to discuss the status negotiations purchase of Spectrum Alaska LNC, which is with TAD up there, and consult with our legal counsel. So
second.
Any opposed? We are in. We're going to do that. You got a room for us?
Thank you.
Well, I asked Jerry to give me the right wording. I mean.